doing?
Well, I'm so happy to finally be talking to you. We keep going back and forth with texting and messages.
And I'm so happy to talk to you. Anytime I could talk to you is a blessing for me. I love you.
Oh, and you know I love you. It's you are my inspiration. You are truly.
we've been doing a long time now, Deb. You know that? We've been at this, man. We've been out here fighting a good fight for a long time together, like back to back.
Yeah, we have.
Man, I know that, and I don't even know how to thank you anymore. You've been so great for me, and I mean personally to me, it's been crazy, man. I every time we talk, I always think about the first time we ever met in that hotel in L.A. for Supremacy.
Yep.
And it's funny, man. Like I feel like I've been telling that story for like 10 years now, but it's just beautiful, man. And then last year when you shocked me at the Critics Awards, I was like, cannot believe you sat with me that whole time and did that. Like, I have never been tricked that good.
Well,
I said, why is Debbie going up there on that stage like that? Who is she talking about? I said, she's talking about me. It took me, I might have been the dumbest person on earth that day. I'm like, damn, whoever they talking about is a nice guy. You know what I mean? And then I'm like, wait a minute. She started to talk about things I've done. What a man! That's the top of the top for me of all time.
And do you know, I had to wing that whole thing. I just found out about 10 minutes before I had to go up there. So I had to wing that. And afterwards, people kept saying, "God, how long did it take you to write that speech? That was a good speech." I said, "I don't write speeches." I said, that was just me talking about Dion from my heart.
Oh, man, it was great, man. So for those that don't know what we're talking about, last year I received an award from the Critics Association that basically was just a beautiful honor. The only problem was no one told me I was getting it. So for the entire night, I'm sitting by Debbie, and she gets up to go obviously present an award to someone. So we're clapping and excited, and the whole room settles, and she goes into this 3.5-4 minute speech, and I'm sitting there, you know, waiting for the next person to receive their award. And if there's a 4 minute speech, at around the 3:31 mark is when I was like, oh my God, she's talking about me. And it was just a great night, man. And I wouldn't have wanted it to be any different. It was just beautiful, man. And for that, that's like the highest ranking surprise, we got you award that I've ever received, man. So it was great. Thank you for that.
Giving you that award, Dion, has been the highlight of my life, in all honesty. Aww. The highlight of my life. I was prouder to give you that award and to say those things about you than I was when my father was inducted into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame and I accepted the award for him posthumously.
Oh, my God.
So
you always gotta don't start making me cry right now. Look, don't do it to me right now. I'm trying not to be, you know what? I'm gonna go and shed a tear. Gonna do it.
We always make each other cry. Always. Well, one thing here, I'll make you happy. One thing we don't have to cry about is Faye Tall. Dion, you know how much I love this film, and I am so excited to hear other people say that are seeing it talk about how they love it.
Yes, it's been a journey. You know, what's interesting, Fatale is a really, really interesting movie, man. Like, it's a very complex movie if you really pay attention to what the complexities are of it. It's a fun film if you just want to watch a movie.
Yeah.
But if you really dissect that film, there's a lot of moving pieces in there that speak directly to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the movie, and I was so happy not only to see your review on it, but to also see Pete Hammond's review on it, also to see the New York Times review on it, also to see the Boston Herald's review on it, Variety, and a few others that I just was like, man, they understood, you know, what that movie was about. And then obviously when you have been doing this for so long, you know, one of the things that we've really prided ourselves on, that I have as a filmmaker, is making sure that the audiences are satisfied with the movie. Big deal for me because I'm an audience. You know what I mean? I go to movies, and I don't go to watch movies critically. I go to watch movies to see, am I enjoying it, and am I taking something away from it? And, you know, like Black and Blue, like The Intruder, and now like Fatale, it's been great, man, for these movies to be floating in the, you know, the 80 to 95% audience score. I know Fatale right now is like teetering between 89 and 92. It's just great, man. It's like, it just makes you feel really good. But the movie, to me, has so many great messages in it. You know, the first thing is, what's the most important thing in your life? Your
yeah.
name and your legacy. Who are you? You know what I mean? So what I think we were able to do in this film was pretty much dissect life in terms of, like, here's a guy who has it all. He's handsome. He has the suits. He has the fast car. He has the $5 million house. He's got the company. He's got, you know what I mean? It looks like, on the outside, it looks like, oh, my God, I want to live that life. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But then when you begin to open the door and go behind, you know, the curtain, you're like, oh, man, it's all messed up. You know what I mean? Like, it's all messed up. And right now in society, that's how social media allows us to be. Like, people are like, oh, my God, look at this. They got this. They got that. And then if you think about somebody like Kate Spade a couple years ago,
yep.
billionaire, you wake up the next morning, you're like, she killed herself?
Yep.
Yeah. Why? Why? I thought she had it all. That's what I thought that was interesting about the film was, you know, people could be going through something and we not know it because the outside picture looks so beautiful and so pristine. And it's the same thing with Hilary Swank in the film. You know, here she is. She looks like a decorated officer. Looks like she has it all together in the first couple of scenes of the movie. And
then you dig.
It's tough, you know what I mean? Then you go, wait, she's broken too. So I just love the idea of two broken characters in the film, and flawed characters are so great to play with because we're all flawed.
Well, and what you do here, you and I have consistently seen this, and this is kudos to you, Dion, is that each film that you do, you're adding more cinematic complexity to your storytelling. Not a lot of directors do that, but I can look at every one of your films and follow the progression of you as a filmmaker and what you're tackling in terms of elevating the cinematic storytelling level. And you really, really ramp it up here with all the underpinnings and the underlying themes that David has in the script. And you carry that through. A perfect example is your production design, Charlie's production design, where Derek's house, it's sleek, it's chrome, it's glass, it's breakable. Whereas Valerie's house, it's brick, it's gritty, it's earthy, it's unbreakable. You set that up with your visuals and without saying anything. You don't need exposition.
Right.
But you watch things get slowly break down using your cinematic tools in the toolbox to tell a story. And you challenged yourself with the complexity of this script. Because I think, in all honesty, as complex as Supremacy was emotionally as a script, this one has so many layers. And you really set that tone with that opening shot, overhead shot, of the freeways, and I've written this to you a couple times. That's the first thing I said to you after I saw it, was that freeway, the web of lies, deceit, overpasses, underpasses, things stepping on things, that sets up this entire story, and you give us that in one shot. Boom, this is what we're going to get.
Yeah, he was in traffic.
Oh, God!
Yeah.
Oh! Kill me! Oh!
Look. I think that shot, when I put that into the film, it was exactly what I wanted to have happen. Like, and you nailed it when we talked about the movie and when you wrote your review of the film. I was like, wow, I hadn't really seen that and got that. And then when I heard it from other people, I was like, wow, like, I'm happy people are noticing little things that are there that really, really are story points. You know what I mean? The fact that he is on a winding web, a roller coaster ride at the beginning of the film, you know, that freeway looks like a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's gritty and it's choppy and it's, you know, you can't move and it's, you know, bumper to bumper traffic, and he's just one soul. And I was like, man, this is just a great way to open this, because it's just one soul in the middle of millions of people.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And here's his story. I just thought, man, that was a great way to open the film. And I thought Michael Ealy, you know, look, I've had the pleasure to work with Michael Ealy before this with Dennis Quaid in The Intruder.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really cool about him was on The Intruder, I knew what that movie was. You know, that movie was designed to be a audience, popcorn, have fun, have a couple of social relevant moments that people really could understand. But I wanted to make a really, really good, fun theater movie. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And there were some moments inside that movie with Michael and Dennis where I was like, damn, I wish I just had more to give him. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Because you could just see how talented he is and that there was three more levels to him. And so when we got ready to do Fatale and Hilary Swank had came on board first and I didn't have my, you know, opposite of her, I was like, it's got to be Ealy, because I just kept thinking to myself, like, wow, I there were so many Usual Suspects to me. You know, it was so many people offering themselves, new guys, this guy, that, you know, and I'm like, man, like, I just wanted to give Michael that chance. And every day I watch that movie, I'm so happy that I made that decision, because he killed that movie. He killed it.
Oh.
He was great.
Well, you know, the great thing about Michael, and I told you, and you and I talked about this after Intruder, and we've talked about it. I've, you know, written to you about it with Fatale. Michael has this really great ability that you look at him, be it in your film, be it in something like The Perfect Guy. You look at, you just see the wheels turning. He can give you this look with his eyes, and you see the wheels are turning upstairs. There is never an empty moment in his performance, ever.
Oh, not at all.
You know, you can even go back to Think Like a Man and those, and you know, those comedy films. He's always thinking, and you see that, and it comes through. And that's so key in this film and in this character of Derek. And having seen Michael, I can't envision anybody else in this role. I still am utterly amazed that after the physical abuse he went through in The Intruder, he came back to work with you again to get beat up even more. Dion!
Yeah, he was great. No, but he was great. But that was a physical beating up, and this is a mental
Okay, I'm sorry. Look, you've got your psycho moment in this film. Don't tell me that elevator sequence is not a physical moment.
Obviously, you know, I'm a fan of, you know, Mr. Line, Fatal Attraction, and obviously,
yes,
Strangers on a Train. You know what I mean? Like, look, these are all movies that I love.
Yep.
And I make, look, every movie that I've made, I've tried to pay homage to the people that I have learned from. And you have to remember, I'm a self-taught filmmaker.
Yep.
So my school was watching movies, period. Like, it took me a while to design how I want to shoot and what I want to shoot and why I'm shooting things and what do I want to say. But I try my hardest to make sure that people remember these classics. You know, Intruder was great because I had Dennis Quaid and I could pay homage to Stanley Kubrick. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Even in Fatale, there's a very, very nice wink to the Hughes brothers with Tyron Turner. And
mm-hmm.
for those that don't know who the Hughes brothers are, they're incredible directors, but they made one of the biggest cult classics in the urban world in our history. There was a movie called Menace to Society. And that film starred this character, Tyron Turner, who is also in Fatale. His name is Tyron. And there was a car, a 5.0 Mustang, that these guys drove in the Hughes Brothers movie, and I put that same car in our film, and, you know, and obviously the Strangers on the Kubrick and the Strangers on the Train, that whole element of is what I captured with Fatale. Like, I wanted that, but I wanted our version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think these movies are great to make, and I think that Michael Ealy was fantastic, but what I think made Michael even greater in this film, because I really believe that this is Michael's best performance ever.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I wholeheartedly.
It was his counterpart. it was Hillary Swank. And I'm just going to say this because it has to be said over and over again. There's probably, I think there might be three or maybe four women historically that have ever won two Oscars, right? And she's one of them. She's one of them. But my point is this. That was not a mistake. She's that good.
Yeah.
She's that good. I don't care if she hasn't had the, you know, the career where she's on every giant movie, and she's that good. And there are very few women that can stand in the ring and box with her.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I learned that on set. So I was already a fan. I was already like, oh, Swank, you got a baby. You know what I mean? I'm already doing all that. She's like, Dion, stop it. And we just got a great relationship. But I was not even prepared personally as a filmmaker for what I was getting ready to see when I said action. And it took me 30 minutes with Dante Spinotti. Me and Dante, who, legendary, Oscar Award nominated.
Like, yep.
Me and him went to the back one day, the first day, and he said, gosh, she's really good. I said, yeah, you think? Like, what are you talking about? She's really good. And I said, we got to adjust the camera a little bit different because we were just trying to do a little quick scene. And I'm like, no, we got to go ahead and shoot this tighter and cover this because she's that good. And when we talk about actresses and actors and, you know, you think about people like Denzel. You think about people like Meryl Streep. You think about people like Jamie Foxx. You know what I mean? When you
yeah.
start thinking about some of these actors and actresses, and then you go, oh, yeah, there's this one group of actors, and then there's this other group of actors. She's the other group.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's happening with her on a scene is her subtle nuances, the way she moves
yep.
her face, the way she cuts her eyes, the way she delivers a line, the way she waits for a moment before she says something, all of those things become so terrific on screen. You know, the scene in Fatale, when she comes in and she says, have I seen you somewhere before? And I'm like, and I'm looking at that while we're shooting that, and I'm going like, oh my God. Like, if you were his wife, it looks like, has she seen him somewhere before? Like, maybe she's seen him somewhere. But if you're thinking about Michael's side of it, she's playing with him. And that's very hard as an actress to pull off, someone that could have two completely different feelings in one scene. I said, man, this girl's out of here. It's crazy.
Okay, let's talk about that scene for a minute, because that comes in roughly at the 27:53 mark. Roughly 27:53. And as she says that, Dante starts moving the camera in on a killer close-up of Ely, and we start seeing sweat beating up on him. But then at the same time, you have your color, your tonal color shift into yellow, caution. You use colors so incredibly here. But this one scene that runs from that roughly 27:53 to 28:57, that 1 minute, just that gels everything that you are doing as a cinematically in this film. Right there, it shows the skill of your two lead actors. It shows keen editing by Eric and Peck. The sound design kicks in, and Dante's camera and that use of color, it all congeals in that 1 minute mark, in that 1 minute segment. And it just explodes from there. That is incredible filmmaking, Dion. Incredible.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. And that's a lot of credit to Dante as well. Listen, Dante, which we all know the story, and for listeners that might be out there that might hear this, I'll just give you the 30-second of it all. A few years ago, I went to this man's house. I wrote him a letter, asked him, could he please just take a meeting with me. He obliged over email. I have no idea who this man is. He does not know me. Only thing I know is his work. I'm an independent filmmaker. I am making movies that cost $2 to $4 million, period. At the time, Dante was on getting ready to prep a $150 million film. I walk in this front room. I meet him for 3 hours. We hit it off. 71 or 72 year old Italian man, and me, I think I might have been just turning 40, you know, black dude, right? We're like talking, and I get up to leave. He says, "Don't go anywhere. You never told me about your movie. You only came here to ask me questions about what I do." I in turn said, "Yes, man. I'm not gonna tape out my movie because I'm making a film that costs $3 million." The long story of it all is Dante passes on the $150 million movie. He comes and works on our $3 million movie. And since then, we have done three films together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's just a testament to who he is as a person. But when you obviously understand, and this is for everyone in the film universe to really, really grab onto and hold onto, this is arguably one of, and I'm not saying it because he's my friend and because he came and worked with me and because I think he's the greatest. I'm saying it because you just have to, if you're a sports fan, you just got to look at the stats, right? The numbers don't lie.
Yep.
And Dante, pound for pound, is arguably one of the best cinematographers of our time. And when you think about Manhunter, when you think about, this was the kid that was on his knees working, lighting for Michael Mann when he made Manhunter? Hannibal? Right? Like, what? And then when you think about his work in Public Enemies and Last of the Mohicans and Heat, and you know, you could just go, and obviously the obvious things are Ant-Man and X-Men, and look, all that's great. But when you get someone like that, and we were able to get him off a towel, and I said, "Dante, we're coming back to L.A. He said, "Dion, I have not shot in L.A. since I shot Heat."
Wow.
And I said, "Oh, it should have been crazy." You know me, I gotta, you know, I'm the urban dude. So I'm like, "Oh, it's going to be crazy." And it was crazy. And when I tell you this dude was lighting, that mark of the film that you're talking about, here's what's crazy. When you see the film and you watch it, the colors in Vegas were two different colors.
Yep.
So Hillary was living in a red, and Michael Ealy was living in a purple. And what's crazy is a purple is blue. And when they come together in the living room of the house at the 27 mark that me and you were talking about, he blends all the colors again with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "You got to be kidding me." Now all of the colors are bleeding together.
Yep.
Because now it's a mess. You know what I mean? I'm going like, "Oh, man." And there's a really, really good example of this for the film enthusiasts out there that like Dante and just want to see this film. It's a really great opportunity for you to see how great a cinematographer is. Watch Fatale. Watch Michael Ealy in Las Vegas at the club.
Yep.
Watch how he takes Michael's world, Hillary's world, and clashes them together in the bedroom scene. It's incredible. Like, I even when I watch the movie now, Debbie, I'm like, this dude, he's remarkable. When I get, and I'm going to shut up. When I get regular friends, like, I'm talking about like the friends, like young black dudes that call me and be like, "Yo, D, I seen Fatale, man, that shit was crazy." I'm like, "Yeah, it was crazy. Yo, whoever did that lighting shit," when I get that, that's when I'm like, "Okay, you got one of the greatest." When regular people say, "Who did the lighting?" That's when you go, "Okay, this is a special person."
Now, Dante's work is just exquisite in this film. And here again, this is what, it's his work and his collaboration with you that has elevated your cinematic storytelling that matches, you know, and even in cases surpasses the twists and turns of David's script.
Yes.
So amazing. Talk to me about the beach scene. You know, I absolutely love that beach scene, not only with Dante's camera work and capturing the sun and the golden reflection on the windows as they're looking through binoculars and see things that people don't want to have seen, but that sound design. Oh my God.
Crazy.
What?
Jeff Zanelli.
Well, you've got Jeff's score, but you've also got the sound design in that scene,
yeah,
where slowly, as Ely's character of Derek, he's fallen on his knees. He is just totally
crazy,
destroyed.
Right? Yeah.
And you hear the crash of the waves, and the waves are getting louder, and the squawk of the seagulls, and that's slowly fading out and being consumed by the break of the waves, the roar of the surf, and the scoring. How long did it take you and your sound team to put that, to sonically, to put that together for that power?
Yeah, look, here's the thing. This is something that I have been personally developing over time. That the sound design was created by King Soundwork. Greg King is who we have been using on the last couple of movies that I've made. I'm a gigantic fan of sound, if you haven't noticed. I like my films to be very loud when they are supposed to be loud, and I like them to be very quiet when they're supposed to be quiet. But, you know, but this is also a homage back to me with those earlier films in the 90s, 80s and 90s. You know what I mean? When you start thinking about Dune and RoboCop and Predator and, right, like, those movies sonically were, like, just candy for you. You're like, oh, man, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger has a big gun. You know what I mean? Like, I love those things. And this movie, to me, was so cerebral where it allowed me to really do what I do well, which is let people be in people's heads.
Yeah.
And, you know, we played that a little bit with Dennis Quaid and The Intruder played his head. I did it a lot in Black and Blue with Naomi Harris and her character. But this time it was like I could play inside Michael's head. And I just thought to myself, man, when you have these moments where it's crazy, it's like when you have a moment that scars you, or you have a moment of, you know, of hurt, it's like everything becomes still and everything is loud. You know, a song might be loud in the radio, a door slam, a dog barking. It's because spiritually you're locked into a different place. And when this happens to him on the beach, I said, man, we should just allow everyone to understand the world is crashing in on him. And what better than the waves of the ocean crashing against the land, right? And seagulls, you know, flocking above him overhead. And, you know, all of those things was just in the edit, in sound editing. I'm like, man, turn all that up and bring it up and don't turn it down. And they're like, yeah, we should probably. I said, no, leave it up because it's over. And then it goes away. And 1 second, and we go to her life. You know what I mean? I'm going, and now she's getting ready to get destroyed, too. And it's just like, it's so great, man, like to be able to play with those things mechanically in movies when you really understand where those little spots are. And it's rhythmic. You know what I mean? I love music, too. So a lot of that, the movie is laced with music that I love and that the culture loves. So deep sweat. You know what I mean? In the middle of the movie, it goes. It has all the new young kids in the middle, and then that towards the end, it gets back to some old jazz. It's just a very fun sonic film.
It really is, and I think it is your strongest film in terms of your sound design. I really think this is the strongest sonic experience we've had in your films so far.
I would agree with that. And I think this movie is the one that has lended that the most.
Yes.
In terms of, like, picture-wise, you know what I mean? I think I really, really love, you know, which is a completely different film. I really love the sound in Black and Blue. I love like, the guns, like, how we worked on that with Naomi and a sea of people trying to attack her in this isolated building. But this one, it allowed for us to really be able to hand stitch the sound throughout the film, and that's rare for me to have a movie that allows you to do that. I think the only other movie I've been able to play around like that was Supremacy.
I was going to say,
because it was such a high impact moment, quiet moment,
slow
moment, fast moment. You know what I mean? And you could play a little bit in there, but I would agree with you. Fatale is very, very well done. King Soundwork, Jeff Zanelli's score is amazing, and you know, you put those two things with Dante's lighting and Hilary Swank, you got something really, really fun.
Well, and of course, and what I love is that after we've built up to this cacophony, visually and sonically, we then get you then reel us bring us back down into everything in the world is black and white. In Derek's apartment for the wake after the funeral, everything is black and white. There is not a shred of color anywhere. And that is so key, especially when you throw in the mom and the mom speech, because you're never too old to get a mom speech.
No, not at all, man. I mean, the mom, this part of the film is where we were just originally talking about. This is where either you're going to get it or you're not.
Yep.
And for me, I have to make movies that come from a real place where I've come from, because I know there are millions of others like me. And for a black man in America who comes from the inner city like I have, come from low-income housing like I have, the mom is the strongest voice. It's the strongest thing we have as men. She normally is the breadwinner. She's the person working multiple jobs. She's the person that is, you know, when things are completely bad, she's the one telling you everything's going to be all right. And in this world that we're living in right now, which is called the cancel culture, meaning you can wake up today and the culture is saying like, oh, no, we heard you was this, and now everyone, now you wake up and you've been banned, right? Family is all you have. And I felt it was very strong for us to show this guy lose everything and everything to go away from him and everybody to be against him. But his mom is still like, what's the most important? She knows what he needs to do. It's not about the house. It's not about the car. She tells him, go clear your name.
Yep.
Everything else will come. You know what I mean? But you need to take care of that first. You don't be worried about no house. Don't be worried about what they're saying on the news. You need to go get your name back. And to me, I said, man, and here's what's great about it again, Debbie, I'm getting the comments, I'm getting people email, I'm getting people calling about that scene.
Mm-hmm.
That scene. Out of everything, like Dion. Like, and I said, I know, man, it's powerful. It's powerful. And I just, look, I think this movie is a very good combination of Hollywood, what they need to have to make a movie successful, but also cultural relevancy is what this movie really is. So if you're someone who's not very versed in the culture, you might not see all these windows and doors that we're showing you. You know what I mean? You might not. You might jump right over the mom. You might actually jump right over the cousin. You might jump, you know what I mean? You might jump over Hillary and her alcohol abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You might be, oh, just, no, but Hillary Swank is fighting for something too.
Yep.
She's not just crazy. Something has driven her crazy. She is trying to get something back.
Yep.
She made an awful mistake. And this comes from a real place. And I said, man, this is a really cool movie to put out there. Everyone should be really liking this film right now.
But you know, and it's really interesting when you say that, yeah, she's not crazy. She's trying to get something back. But the big difference between Derek and Valerie is that Derek has mom saying, straighten up, and basically slap him upside the head and say, you got to clear your name. Your name is all you have. There's nobody who has given any kind of guidance to Valerie whatsoever. And I think that, as you say that makes me think of that. And that it shows the importance of family and the generational aspect of family.
Yeah, you're so right. Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very good mirror to reality that we live in right now. You know, we are all going through so much right now as people. We're all hunkered in our homes. People are dealing with mental depression. People are dealing with anxiety, hypertension, everything you could think of. And the reality is, do you have someone in your life that's telling you everything's going to be all right? Or have you isolated yourself and mentally you're sick? And that's the issue. And that's what we deal with in life, pandemic or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also what I look at when I think about myself as a youth. I have very, very few choices, Debbie. You know, I knew a lot of people. I have a lot of cousins that were shot, killed. I have a lot of cousins that shot and killed that are in prison, right? I have a lot of friends that was like, man, we could go hoop, and that's what I chose to do, was play basketball. But when you have limited choices, you know what I mean? Things get real, really quick. You know what I mean? Like, you really get down to brass tacks. Like, okay, how are you going to eat? How are you going to pay your rent? How are you going to keep the lights on?
Yep.
Or, by the way, the lights are off. Completely, your shoes have holes in the bottom of them. You don't have no clothes. and your mom is heating the whole house with an oven. So some kids say, oh, okay, I'm going to go earn. What does that mean? That means that there's no other choice. So I'm either going to rob somebody, I'm either going to sell drugs, but I'm going to do something right now because I need right now money.
Right.
Right? Like, I don't need money in 3 weeks. We don't have any lights and we're not eating. My little brother's not eating tonight. So that's where you see people make complex decisions. And that's why I say it goes back to that mom and what you just said, which is, you're exactly right. It's interesting for the mom to sell him, like, nope. Slap him, like, nope, you need to go get this done right. And then for Hillary, she's on the other side of that coin where she's like, I need to take care of this right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like this dude is crazy. They, you know, everything is going bad, and I need to take care of this.
Yeah, no, it's really fascinating from a psychological standpoint and in viewing the human condition, Dion. You've really, you know, these performances are so strong, but the construct is just so incredible. And I am so proud of you and what you've done with this film. My God.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Thank you for this.
I have to ask you, you learn so much being self-taught, and the fact that, unlike a lot of filmmakers who will not admit to that, you take great pride in that, as you should. You are a self-taught filmmaker, and here you are, you've at this next pinnacle, and there will be many more to come, I have no doubt. And I will be there for all of them, I promise you. You know, what did you learn about yourself in making this film? Because of the nature of it, because of the complexity, because of the upgraded, even higher production values, what did you learn about yourself making Fatal that you can now embrace and take forward in life, in your future films, what have you?
Oh, yeah, man, I love learning. And I think that I've shown the progression as an independent filmmaker each time I've made a film, I've shown someone how I can progress as a director, and a collaborator and a writer, et cetera. The one thing that I find is very interesting for me personally is that because I was never given an opportunity to make a movie and I had to go make that opportunity by myself, it has allowed us to become very, very good with no money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And when I say no money, means that, you know, we're talking about a 16 millimeter film Supremacy that was shot for $1.5 million.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And even at that stage where people are like, man, you can't use film, I'm going like, no, I want 16 millimeter because I want it to look like that. You know what I mean? And so when I get to Fatal and I realize this is yet another independent film, except guess what? I now have $3 million. You know what I mean? It begins to go like, oh man, Dion, here's what you need. You need a little more time. You need a little more time. You know what I mean? When you're doing 70 and 80 setups a day, that's mm-hmm. not how everyone else is making their film.
No.
I'm working this way because we have $3 million or $4 million, and, you know, we're trying to make these high-end movies at that price range. And the one thing that I learned on Fatal was the same way that I fight for actors, the same way I fight for to get a movie up, the same way I fight for a writer to hurry up and let me get my hands on it, is the same way I need to fight for a little bit more money so I can have a little bit more time to exercise my artistry on set. And I think this was a very, very good learning experience for me on this movie because it also allowed me to work with a 2-time Academy Award winner. And for me to actually, for the first time, get to learn and see how she works.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That was, you know, I'm getting to play a game with LeBron James now. So I'm like, oh, he don't pass like the dude I know. You know what I mean? Or he's gonna hit me when I'm open no matter where I'm at. So it's another level to this. And it let me see, like, wow, not only did I admire her for how great she was on set, but it also allowed me to know within like 3 days of being with Hillary, I was like, oh, I could do this at the highest level. You know what I mean? Like, because the way we gelled and the way we worked and the things that we talked about and how we approached the film together, even with a micro-budget movie like Fatal, I, you know, she came to me one time and said, Dion, it was just, She's like, I cannot wait to see when you have $30 million. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I can't either. Because we now understand it's like, it's time. Sometimes when you know you creatively are there, and strength-wise you're there in terms of how you see things and what you want to do, now it just becomes a time issue. Like, can you have a little bit more time to work on a scene or build something out even more? And it also allowed me to see how great Dante was in these pressure situations, too, and why he's delivered at the level he has. We think about Michael Mann and him working together on something like Heat, and then you understand that scene with them coming out of the bank and shooting the guns, when you understand that they trained for that for multiple weeks for that one scene and shot that scene over the course of 3 weeks, you go like, oh, okay, he had time to get it right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I'm taking into 2021 now, is going like, Dion, the very next film that I'm going to do, I'm going to make sure that we have the time, because I am very, very high on film. I love it. When I'm done, I'm hoping that someone would mark me like, yo, he was one of the greatest ones to do it, man. He learned, he came through, he did the work, and wow, look at these last 5 or 6 movies he's made, you know, in his later years. He's one of the, I want that. Like, I'm fighting for that. And the only way you can get to that is by studying, training, working your ass off, and learning from others. And also, oh, by the way, being a good person and giving credit to people that have helped you along the way. And I think we're going to get there, man. And this next movie I'm getting ready to do, which is called Grave Hill, which is written by Jeffrey Fletcher, who won the Academy Award for Best Writing. First black man to ever win an Academy Award. He wrote Precious. I'm doing this movie with the guys that created or produced Parasite, Ho, and CJ Entertainment. And it's an incredible movie built in 1840. About a young lady who was not a slave anymore, who returns back to the plantation she once lived in to work. And wow. I'm going, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. So I expect this one to have the sound design, cinematography, everything that we are talking about. I hope this is the next step for me.
I would be remiss not to say that without Roxanne, you get none of this. Without Roxanne, you get none of this. Her creativity in stretching a dollar.
She's one of the best. And look, Debbie, I'll tell you this without no hesitation. Sometimes, man, you got to give people credit and just be like, look. And I'll go back to that thing about time again. It's one thing if you're a physical producer and you are producing movies that cost $150 million and people are like, oh, my God, look at. Or if you run into a problem and you can pick up a phone and call the studio and say, hey, we ran into a $10 million problem, right? It's another thing when you got $3 million and there is no one to call and there is no tomorrow. You cannot come back to that location. You cannot get that actor again in a week, right? And oh, by the way, you don't have enough money to finish the film if you don't get that. You've got to go to, tomorrow has to be the next shot. And when you get into those situations and you're dealing with Academy-nominated people, Academy Award-winning people, hey, man, you got to be really good. I told Roxanne, I said, you need to let people know, not with a big ego, but I said, I'll do it. You're one of the best producers in Hollywood. You have $100 million in box office receipts from 7 independent films.
Mm-hmm.
You've made arguably 3 or 4 of the dopest cultural movies that we've seen in the last 5 years for our culture. And I said it's time for people to recognize you and be like, yo, you're special, because you are. You know what I mean? And I love her to death. And like I said, I love strong women. That's why I love you so much.
Aww. You know, I think the world of Roxanne, and I think she is just brilliant with what she does as a producer. And, you know, the fact that you made a film without needing a crane this time, what did she do with all that extra money?
Right, well, we kicked that $300. we kicked that extra $450 that we used for a crane that day, and we put that into some more lenses. That's what we did.
Do you know what lenses you shot? Dante shot this one on.
Yeah, we used a bunch of hog lenses on this film,
mm-hmm.
which were you know, some of the primes were hog, but they made a couple of Panavision really handcrafted a package for Dante in this film, man, where I'm actually going to post some stuff that he used in the movie later on today.
Oh, good.
Because, you know, a lot of times what happens with Dante is people are like, hey, we got this new lens, or we got this new glass, and you guys want to try, and they give it to people like Dante and you know, and these guys of that stature, and allow them to test it because they know these are the best guys. And so we were kind of lucky. There was a few things that we got to test that were really, really good. And I had that same experience with Daniel Pearl on The Intruder. Hawk Lenses came and gave us some really cool stuff. And Daniel Pearl, we were the first people to ever use those Hawk Lenses
in
The Intruder before everybody got them. So that was like, I love that stuff because it's kind of like, you know, I love shoes. I love tennis shoes. So
oh, I know.
It's almost like you're getting a new tennis shoe before anyone else has it. I'm like, woo, we got the new lenses, baby. Well, Debbie, thank you so much. We love you. Happy New Year. Thank you. Thank you so much. Speak soon.